Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to St. Stephen's. My name is Prash. I'm the senior minister here. Very warm welcome if you're visiting or joining us today for the first time. It's really great to have you at church with us. Happy Easter, and I hope you and your family enjoy the weekend celebrating. I'm just here to talk a little bit, very short today, don't worry, to reflect on those three questions, actually, that the girls raised in their talk. Who invented Easter? Why is the resurrection necessary? And what really happened at the resurrection? Those were the three questions that they asked during the little skit, which they did very well at. I'm going to flip those last two, actually, and think of them in the opposite direction. But I think those are three really interesting questions. People are not really sure what we're doing this weekend. That's my sense. If you got our flyer in the mail, you would have seen the postcard in the mail, you would have seen the different emoticons at the bottom. And in a sense, they're trying to grasp the variety and spectrum of reasons why people are celebrating, so to speak, Easter. That could be just a celebration. That could have been for church. There was a church building there. It could have been for family. There was a little family icon there. It could have been the Easter bunny or a rabbit or something like that. But what is clear, I think, in our culture at the moment is that people aren't completely sure what Easter is really about. In fact, at Christmas, we talk more about family. We have, in our culture, more of a sense of Christmas is maybe about family for a lot of people. But Easter, what are we celebrating? We love having the long weekend, especially after a year of pandemic restrictions. But what is Easter really about? And the first question that both Thea and Evie asked, who invented Easter, is a really great question. Now, I forgot my prop, but anyway. I get given stuff around the first week of September, that first Sunday in September all the time, which though I treasure is completely useless. Do you know why? It's Father's Day. And that means that something has been created at school or at preschool, which has lots of sentiment behind it, but is generally pretty useless in real life. And valueless to most people apart from to myself. Now, I treasure whatever I get at Father's Day because it's been made by one of my children. It's valuable to me. But it's valuable primarily because it's a sentiment, isn't it? There's a sentiment behind it. Father's Day is a holiday based on sentiment. It's not a holiday, but it's a celebration based on sentiment. It's different to, say, your birthday. I think we treat someone's birthday. My birthday is celebrated in our house in a different and more meaningful way than Father's Day. And that's because your birthday is tied to a very unique moment in history, isn't it? Like there's no one else was born on the 4th of June like me. By the way, that's my birthday. Please note that down in your calendars, regulars. No one else was born on the 4th of June like me. And so to celebrate my birthday is a wonderful and unique experience, at least for me it is. But Father's Day is born out of sentiment. Now, I think when we say who invented Easter, that's actually kind of like equating Easter to Father's Day. Like it's a moment that arises out of good sentiment. But what I want us to see in the passage that was just read to us and on which the drama was based is that it is much more than sentiment that lies at the heart of Easter. Easter is primarily a historical moment. Just have a look at some of the things that pop up. See, here's the first couple of verses. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so that they might go to anoint Jesus' body. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise. You see the specificity of what's there? These are specific people. They're not just three women, but Mark makes the point of pointing to the exact women they are so that you can, if you were in Mark's time and reading it, you could actually find these people. And there's a very specific time. It's after sunrise on a very particular day. Why is this? Because for Mark, Easter is not just a wonderful sentiment. Oh, we believe in power and hope, and therefore we're going to celebrate this holiday. It is something that goes back to a very particular moment. And as the ladies are walking along, see the question, who will roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb? The whole account has the taste of reality. These are women who are grieving the loss of one of their great, their leader, their friend, their confidant, their mentor. And they've gone to anoint his body as was custom. And only halfway along, they've realized, who's going to move that ginormous boulder that lies in the way? It's the kind of question that a grieving person asks. They haven't thought through all the realities. This is an account which in some ways reveals the irrationality of what they're doing. And as they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in white sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. Now, the translation, I don't know if you know, but the New Testament was originally written in Greek, and it's been translated over time. Now it's translated in English. But that New Testament Greek word, alarmed, it's also the same word that is used to describe Jesus when he's in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he's weeping. What the writers say is almost like tears of blood, such as his grief. That alarmed is like an understatement. But that's exactly what you'd expect, isn't it, from people who've lost someone? And then he goes on, he says, you are looking for Jesus the Nazarene who was crucified, but he's risen. See, the point, Mark wants to make the point, they haven't gone to the wrong tomb, an empty tomb. It's not like they got it wrong. In fact, we know before this account that the ladies actually saw where they laid down the body of Jesus after he was crucified that first Good Friday. So they know where they're going, and the messenger makes sure that he identifies. They're looking for someone. He's not talking about someone altogether different. He's talking about the Jesus that they're looking for. And finally, in verse 7, right at towards the end, he said, he's going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you. You will see him. You see, at the heart of what the Bible is saying about the resurrection is that it's based on what people encountered and experienced and witnessed. So it's not just a sentiment. Actually, Easter is not an invention, but it's actually a moment in history. It's not a product of great sentiment or great hopeful desires for our world and our future. It is a moment in history. And this is so important when we think about why we're celebrating this. I am very struck that we live more and more in a culture that has lost a sense of what the Christian faith is talking about. That's okay. If you never grew up in a Christian family, if your parents kind of let it go, and so you didn't get told all those things, that's okay. I'm glad you're here. Because one of the first things I want to say is that Easter is not just a religious festival. In fact, it's far from it. Easter is this moment in history. But the second question, or it was the third question that the girls asked, but I want to flip it. The second question is, what really happened in that moment? Because it's one thing to say, oh, there's this event and we celebrate it, a bit like the birth of Prash. But 4th of June, by the way, if you didn't get it before. But what really happened on that is what's crucial. What really happened? And you see what they say, verse 6. Verses, by the way, I'm talking about little numbers that you might read in the Bible. Verse 6, he is not here, says the messenger. See the place where they laid him. And the account in Mark is opening up a truth which the other stories of Jesus' life reinforce over and over again, which is that Jesus didn't just rise in their memories. It's not like they said, Jesus lives on in our memory. We say that about our grandparents, for example. I love them. My grandmother lived to 95. I say, she lives on in my memory. I have these memories of her. Or we might say, they're looking over us, a bit like Mufasa is looking over Simba. But that is not what the Bible is claiming. The Bible is claiming the first Easter, and the thing that we're celebrating, is that Jesus actually came back from the dead. He was dead for 3 days, and he comes back to life physically. In fact, the other accounts will say not just that he came back to life, they'll point to the fact that he ate with people, that people who doubted him, like Thomas, for example, touched him. They actually touched his wounds. And they're saying all that stuff because what they want is to understand this is not like a sentimental resurrection. The Bible is claiming that on Easter, the most extraordinary, in the true meaning of that word, thing happened. Jesus came back to life. Jesus came back to life. The Bible claims Jesus physically rose from the dead. Now, why does the resurrection matter? That was the third question. And I think this is where we start to get wobbly. There's heaps of people in the building today. Great job. Thanks for coming to church this Sunday morning. It is really great. And if your family invited you or a friend invited you, good on you for taking the invite. But why does the resurrection matter? And I think this is where people get a bit wobbly. Because they're happy for the sentiment. They're happy for the message of hope that the Bible is talking about. They're happy for a new future. but they kind of want to understand the resurrection in their own terms. Oh yes, I'm happy to believe that Jesus spiritually rose. I'm happy to believe that Jesus rose in their hearts and still rules over them. But the Bible is challenging you. That's not a biblical faith. I mean, you're entitled to believe that. You're absolutely entitled to believe whatever you want about what happened that first Easter. But you're not believing what the Bible said is the challenge here. The Bible is saying he came back to life. He was dead and he came back to life. Blood coursed through his veins. He breathed human air. The Bible is challenging us that. And so what we often want to do is to kind of cut that bit out of the story. But here's the challenge for us. You can't do that. Now, you might be feeling a sense of dissonance. How can I possibly, how can I possibly believe that? How can I possibly take that on? And you're feeling a bit uncomfortable, but that is actually okay. Look at what the women do in the last verse. Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid. We kind of, look, as a minister, I wish we were talking about one of the other accounts which talks about things that happened later where they were all rejoicing and telling everyone. But this is really interesting. This is where Mark finishes it, actually. These three women, the first witnesses, Mark could have prettied up the picture by using men as eyewitnesses, because back then, unfortunately, the testimony of men was more powerful than the testimony of women. But Mark believes in the truth, and so the women are the ones who testify to, because they're the ones who first found it. And their testimony at first is actually this: trembling, bewildered, afraid, fleeing. Why? Because actually they have understood what's happened. Someone who was dead for 3 days has come back to life. And you know what? That should shake us, actually. It should shake us. You can't believe in the resurrection and be apathetic. You can't believe in the resurrection and be apathetic. I mean, you can. You can do whatever you want. But I don't think it's coherent. I don't think you can say, oh, yeah, I believe what the Bible says. Jesus came back to life after 3 days. And he appeared to over 500 people. Yep, I'm okay with that. But I'm just going to continue on with my priorities and my shape of life and my decision making, and I'm fundamentally going to be in charge. You can't do that. Because if the resurrection's true, it is absolutely life-altering. It turns the world upside down. Because this is the most extraordinary moment. And why is this necessary? Because in the resurrection, we see God for who God is. That is a God of power, extraordinary power. Only God can do what the resurrection claims. And that's because Jesus is God. That's why he does it. The resurrection is necessary because as much as Good Friday reveals the heart of God, the resurrection reveals the power of God. That the great thing that holds everyone's life to a full stop does not hold Jesus. The resurrection is necessary because it describes the power. Now, kids, if you're still with me, some of them have gone. They've exited. They know there's hot. They know there's chocolate eggs at morning tea. If you're with me, do an action with me. Do this. Who can show me their guns? Who's got muscles here? Yes, love it. Krebs, huge, up the front. Fantastic. God has power in the resurrection. That's why the resurrection is necessary, actually. He's being God. He's being what the divine one would be. But it's more than power. I want you to look at what he also says. He's going ahead of you into Galilee, and there you will see him just as he told you. Isn't that extraordinary? Isn't it extraordinary? Because Jesus has just risen from the dead. If Mark's right, and if what he's telling you is actually true, he's done the most extraordinary thing in the history of the world. He's set himself apart from every single other being. And then what does he do? He goes and he says, I'll meet you in Galilee. I'll meet you in Galilee? Why is that? That's easy. It's because of this. Jesus left the tomb, you see, to meet with you. See, the heart of Jesus' story is this, actually. He exercises great humility and great power because he wants to bring great comfort to you. Strength for comfort. Strength for comfort. Jesus could have, I mean, he could have done anything. He could have just left his body there and gone back to heaven. But he raises physically because his job, his desire, his greatest love is to rescue a world that is otherwise defined by mortality. And not just that, but he wants to be with us. So when he leaves the tomb, the first thing he does is not go to his great throne and be acclaimed by the angels, but meet with his people in Galilee. In Galilee. A bunch of fishermen. Why? Because he loves them. Here's what I want to challenge us with. If you came here this morning and you thought, well, it's the usual Easter Sunday, this is what we do. Thank you for being here. I want you just to reflect. Do you believe in the resurrection? Do you think Mark might be onto something? Do you think maybe history has something to say which would turn our life upside down? Do you think that God is powerful? Do you think he exercises his power for your great comfort? Well, then I don't want you to leave just in that state of apathy that you might have come in with. I think it could transform your life. Because I think you have found something. Your eyes have been opened to something absolutely extraordinary. And I don't want you to leave it there. We're going to talk a little bit more about what to do about that in a moment. But right now, I'm going to hand over to Ed. And Ed is going to lead us in some prayers for Easter Sunday.